Okay, now we're going to actually construct Lebesgue measure with our bare hands, using ideas of Carathéodory. So we'll refer to our key lemma from last time. We learned there that the collection capital script F of all intervals is an algebra of subsets of the reals. Also, the length function L gives a measure on this algebra. We apply the Carathéodory extension theorem to this L and this capital script F, that we generate a measure space, capital Roman X, script F star L star. The sigma algebra F star is called the collection of Lebesgue measurable sets, and the measure L star on F star is called Lebesgue measure. Although it is sometimes useful to work with X, F star, L star, it is often more convenient to deal with the smaller sigma algebra containing F rather than with F star. Sorry, the smallest sigma algebra containing F rather than with F star. And in fact, that smallest sigma algebra is the collection capital script B of Borel sets. The restriction of Lebesgue measure to the sigma algebra of Borel sets is called Lebesgue measure. It is a fact that every Lebesgue measurable set is contained in a Borel set with the same measure. So that's very useful. So it's in some sense, Lebesgue measurable sets and Borel sets are indistinguishable. Every Lebesgue measurable set is equal almost everywhere to a Borel measure. Every Lebesgue measurable function is equal almost everywhere to a Borel measurable function. That's morally equivalent to what I just said about the sets. And we will verify these assertions in a little while. So there's virtually no loss of generalities, but to specialize down to the sigma algebra of Borel sets, and that's what we typically do. In this brief discussion, we will describe a generalization of the construction in the last lecture. The new measure that we construct here is useful in probability theory and other applications. So this will be a generalization of the construction of Lebesgue measure to something called Lebesgue-Stieltjes measure. So let g from the reals to the reals be a monotone increasing function. We assume that g is right continuous at each point. We also suppose that the limit as x goes to minus infinity of gx and the limit as x goes to plus infinity of gx exist. The values of the latter two limits could in fact be minus infinity and plus infinity, although that's not typical. Now we define mu sub g of the interval a, b to equal g b minus g a, mu sub g of minus infinity b to be g of b, take away the limit as x goes to minus infinity of g of x, mu sub g of a plus infinity to be the limit as x goes to plus infinity of g of x, take away g a, and mu sub g of minus infinity to be equal to the limit as x goes to plus infinity of g x, take away limit as x goes to minus infinity of g x. We go on to define mu sub g on the algebra capital script F, where capital script F is as in earlier discussion, a finite pairwise disjoint union of such sets to be the corresponding sums. It's easy to see that this mu sub g gives a sigma finite measure on the algebra F. So in the old days, we would have taken g just to be the function x, and then you get mu sub just g just to be the length of the interval indicated. But now we're using g to be the device for measuring the length of an interval, and we get a more general construction. So this measure has a unique extension, which we also denote by mu sub g to the algebra of all Borel sets. This extension is often called the Borel-Stieltjes measure generated by g. According to an earlier theorem, mu sub g actually has an extension to a complete sigma algebra which contains the Borel sets. This last extension is called Lebesgue-Stieltjes measure generated by g. We encountered a version of these ideas earlier in chapter 2. Now let X be a compact Hausdorff space. It is useful to know the dual of C of X, the space of continuous function on X under the supremum norm. We will now treat this matter. So we're shifting gears here and talking about something new. We're now going to calculate the dual of the Banach space C of X. And in fact, it turns out that so more specifically, the dual of C of the interval 0, 1 is a space of measures. And this is called, as have some of our earlier results, it's called the Riesz representation theorem. So, theorem, least representation theorem, third version. Let I be the integral 0, 1. Let phi be a positive bounded linear functional on the continuous functions on I. Then there exists a measure gamma defined on the Borel subsets of I such that phi of f equals the integral over I of f d gamma for all f in the continuous functions. Furthermore, the norm of the functional phi equals simply gamma of I. So this is a very elegant theorem. It says that every positive linear functional is given by integration against a measure, and that the norm of that linear functional is just the measure of the interval. So here's the proof. Let t be a real number such that t is bigger than or equal to 0, less than 1, and let j be a sufficiently large natural number, and let psi sub t j be the function continuous on the interval which equals 1 on 0 t and which equals 0 on t plus 1 over j comma 1. We also specify psi t j to be linear on the interval t comma t plus 1 over j. And the figure shows very clearly the graph of such a function. If j is less than or equal to k and x is in the interval, then 0 is less than or equal to psi sub tkx, less than or equal to psi sub tjx, less than or equal to 1, so the sequence phi of psi sub tj is bounded and decreasing. If t is in the interval 0, 1, then we define g of t to be the limit as j goes to infinity of phi of psi sub tj. Let g of t equal 0 for t less than 0, and define psi 1 of x to be equal to 1 for all x in the interval. If t is bigger than or equal to 1, we set g of t equal to phi of psi 1. Then g is a monotone increasing function on the reals. We claim that g is right continuous. This statement is clear if t is less than 0, where t is bigger than or equal to 1, because the definition of g in those, on those intervals is trivial. So let t be in the half-open interval 0, 1, and let epsilon be bigger than 0. Throughout this proof, we use the supremum norm on continuous functions. So that's the usual norm that we're accustomed to. Choose j bigger than the maximum of 2 and the norm of phi times epsilon reciprocal to be so large that g of t is less than or equal to phi of psi sub t j less than or equal to g of t plus epsilon. If rho sub j is the function in the continuous functions which equals 1 on 0 comma t plus j to the minus 2 and equals 0 on t plus j to the minus 1, take away j to the minus 2 comma 1, and which is linear on t plus j to the minus 2 comma t plus j to the minus 1, take away j to the minus 2, then it is straightforward to check that the norm of rho sub j take away psi sub tj is less than or equal to 1 over j. Therefore, phi of rho sub j is less than or equal to phi of psi sub tj plus 1 over j times the norm of phi, which is less than or equal to g of t plus 2 epsilon. Therefore, we can conclude that g of t is less than or equal to g of t plus j to the minus 2, less than or equal to g of t plus 2 epsilon. By the Hahn extension theorem, there exists a measure gamma on the Borel subsets of R, so that gamma of the interval a alpha beta equals g of beta, take away g of alpha. This shows that gamma of E equals 0 if E intersect I equals the empty set. It also implies that gamma of the interval 0, C equals gamma of minus 1, C equals g of C, and that the norm of phi equals absolute value of phi of psi 1, which is g of 1, which is gamma of I. The last thing we must do now is to show that the linear functional phi is represented by integration against the measure gamma. So let epsilon be bigger than 0. Since f is uniformly continuous on the interval I, there is a delta bigger than 0, so that if x minus y in absolute value is less than delta, and x and y are elements of I, then f at x minus fy in absolute value is less than epsilon. That's uniform continuity. Let a equal t naught less than t1 less than t2 less than dot 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 less than tm equals b be such that the maximum of tk minus 1 is less than delta over 2. Choose j so large that 2 over j is less than the minimum of tk take away tk minus 1 over all k. And so that g of tk is less than or equal to phi of psi sub t sub k sub comma j less than or equal g of tk plus epsilon times m times norm f reciprocal. Now we consider functions defined on I by f1x equals f of t1 times psi sub t1jx plus summation k equals 2 to m, f of t sub k times psi sub t sub k comma j of x take away psi tk minus 1 j of x, f2 of x equals ft1 times chi t naught t1 of x plus summation k equal 2 to m ftk, characteristic function of tk minus 1 tk of x. Notice that f1 is a continuous function on I and that f2 is a step function on I. Clearly, the sup over x and I of absolute f2x take away fx is less than or equal to epsilon. And as an exercise, the reader should also show that the norm of f1 minus f is less than or equal to epsilon. Thus, we have absolute value of phi of f minus phi of f1 is less than or equal to epsilon norm phi. And if k is bigger than or equal to 2, less than or equal to m, then absolute value phi of psi tk comma j take away psi tk minus 1 comma j take away g of tk minus g tk minus 1, all in absolute value less than or equal to epsilon times the quantity m norm f reciprocal. Now we apply phi to f1 and integrate f2 with respect to gamma. The last inequality then gives us absolute value phi f1 minus integral over I f2 d gamma is less than or equal to epsilon. So this is looking promising. Since f2 lies within epsilon of f, we also have absolute value integral over I of f2 d gamma take away integral over I of f d gamma, all in absolute value less than or equal to epsilon times gamma of I. Combining these inequalities, we finally obtain that the absolute value of phi of f minus the integral over I of f d gamma absolute value less than or equal to epsilon times twice norm phi plus 1, and because epsilon bigger than 0 is arbitrarily small, we deduce that phi of f is given by the integration of f against gamma. And that's our theorem. That's the Riesz representation theorem, third form. So, a concluding remark. If the reader will check the proof of the theorem, it will be seen that an arbitrary bounded linear functional, not just positive ones, phi on C of I can be written as the difference, phi plus take away phi minus of two positive bounded linear functionals, and using this observation, we can extend this latest Riesz representation theorem so that we may represent any bounded linear functional on C of I by means of integration with respect to a sine measure defined on the Borel subsets of I. So, the Riesz representation theorem third form is true in complete generality. Any linear functional on the continuous functions is given by integration against the sine measure. Very nice result. Thank you for listening today.